El Paso. The Lord High Constable looked visibly sick as he paced. The predicament she'd placed him in, with regards to thinking the governor was a crook, troubled him deeply. Nearby, Milan stepped up onto the stage to address the crowd. Though she critiqued her own shortcomings, in Maris's estimation, her imitation of the governor was excellent. The crowd grew quiet. Maris frowned. Had Aradel's men prompted that somehow? No. The constables stood in a tight line between the crowd and the mansion, but weren't doing anything to quell the crowd. How odd. Though there were a few jeers, for the most part everyone fell silent, watching through the mists, which seemed thinner than they had before, now that lights had been set up all around the square in front of the mansion. The former rioters genuinely wanted to hear what the governor had to say. Well, why shouldn't they? Maracy felt their mood, one of hostile curiosity. She felt a calmness, too. Milan's speech would work. Everything was fine. Why had she been so worried earlier? It... Rusts! She was being soothed! She snapped alert, suddenly tense. She knew crowds. She'd studied mob dynamics. It was her specialty, and she could tell easily that something was wrong here. But who was soothing? Why? How? Suit, she thought. Waxillium had said the set was involved. His uncle had access to Allomancers, and an inclination to see that Bleeder's plans came to fruition. It didn't matter what Maracy had written for Milan to say. When Suit's men discovered that the governor was deviating from the script, they'd drive the crowd to a frenzy. Suddenly frantic, Maracy didn't listen to the beginning of Milan's speech. Could she get to Aradel? No, he was standing on the rusting stage near Milan. Wayne, putting on a brave face despite his wound, hovered near the two of them, ready to help if something went wrong. Maracy had to move quickly and quietly, not alerting the set. She spotted Reddy standing near the base of the steps, watching the crowd with arms folded. Maracy scrambled over to him and seized his arm. "Reddy," she said. "There's a soother in this crowd somewhere." "What?" he asked absently, glancing at her.
"A soother," Maracy said. "Dampening our emotions. Probably a rioter waiting, too, to drive the crowd into a frenzy once they hear the speech."
"Don't be silly," said Reddy with a yawn. "Everything is fine, Lieutenant."
"Reddy," she said, tightening her grip. "How do you feel?"
"Fine." "Not annoyed at me?" she said. "Not angry that I hold the position you should? Not jealous at all?"
He glared at her, then cocked his head. Then he hissed out softly,
"Damn it, you're right. I usually hate you, but all I feel is a mild dislike. Someone's playing with my emotions."
He hesitated.
"No offense."
"Can't feel offense," Maracy said. "I'm having trouble feeling any strong emotion or urgency. But Reddy, we have to stop them."
"I'll get a squad," he said. "How will we find them, though? They could be anywhere."
"No," Maracy said, scanning the crowd. Her eyes found a carriage parked discreetly in a small alleyway across from the governor's square.
"Not anywhere. They won't want to mix with the masses that they're planning to turn into a murderous mob. Too dangerous. Come on."
25. Upon seeing Lessie's face, Wax growled in a guttural primal sound. The sound of a man getting hit straight in the stomach with a well-driven punch. He held the gun on Bleeder, but his hand wavered and his vision shook. "It's not her. It's not her."
"Again with the guns," Bleeder said softly.
"Rusts, it was Lessie's voice."
"You lean on them too much, Wax. You're a coin shot. How often do I have to point that out?"
"You dug up her corpse?" Wax asked in a pleading voice. He was having trouble seeing straight.
"You monster! You dug up her corpse?"
"I wish I hadn't been forced to do this," Les Bleeder said. "But strong emotion frees us from him, Wax. It's the only way."
She stared down that gun. Of course she would. She was a Chondra. He had to remind himself of that forcibly. The gun meant nothing to her. Lessie. How often had he dreamed of hearing that voice again?
He'd wept for the wish to tell her one last time of his love, to explain the hole, gaping like the wound from a shotgun blast left in him by her death. To apologize. Harmony, I can't shoot her again. Bleeder had outthought him after all.
I worried about using Tan's body, Lessie said, stepping toward him. Worried it would make you figure out who I really was.
You're not, Lessie, she grimaced.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I was never Lessie. Always Pa'am the Chandra.
But I wanted to be Lessie. Does that count for anything? Rusts. She had Lessie's mannerisms down exactly. Milan had said she was good, but this was so real, so believable. He found himself lowering his gun, wishing. Wishing.
Harmony,
he begged. But he didn't have his earring in.
Marcy and Reddy wrapped around, moving over a block before coming back in behind the suspicious carriage. They hadn't been able to gather as large a force as she'd wanted. Not only did they worry about the soother noticing the motion, Reddy was concerned about leaving too few people watching the crowd. Milan's voice carried through the voice projectors, audible even as Marcy and her team of 11 men set up near the far end of the alleyway containing the carriage. How long before the set noticed they'd been had? Probably not long. Marcy had left in some of the beginning part of the speech, in order to not sound too different from innate, but the speech would take a turn very soon. Reddy pulled off his constable's helmet. Marcy's own pressed against her hair, an uncomfortable weight, then nodded to the rest of them in the darkness. With his aluminum-lined helmet off, he could feel the soother's touch more powerfully here than he had out in the crowd. That carriage really was the source of it. He put the helmet back on. The precinct owned only a dozen of these, all donated by Waxillium. Reddy had just enough clout to requisition the task force that had them. He secured his helmet, then reached to his side, taking out a thick jeweling cane, like a long baton with a knob on the end. The others did the same. There would be no gunplay this close to a crowd of civilians.
"We go in quickly and quietly," Reddy whispered to the team. "Hope to Harmony they don't have a coin shot with them. Keep your helmets on. I don't want that soother taking control of any of you."
Marcy cocked an eyebrow. Soothers couldn't control people, though many mistook that. It didn't help that the words of Founding spoke vaguely of Chandra and Kolos being controlled by Allomancy, but Marcy now knew that was only possible for someone who bore hemolytic spikes.
"Combs," Reddy said, speaking in a low voice, "stay at the back. You're not a field agent. I don't want you getting hurt or worse, messing this up."
"As you wish," she said.
Reddy counted softly. On 10, the group of them surged into the misted alleyway. Marcy hung near the back, walking with hands clasped behind her. Almost immediately after entering the alleyway, the constables pulled to a stop. A force of men in dark clothing piled out of a doorway inside the alley, blocking off access to the little carriage. Marcy's heart pounded as the two groups regarded one another. At least this proved she'd been right about the carriage. A few of the newcomers carried guns, but a barked word from one of the dark-clothed men made them tuck those away.
"They don't want to draw the crowd's attention from the speech," Marcy thought. "They still think what the governor is saying plays into their plans."
Keeping this fight quiet would serve both sides. The two groups stood waiting, tense, before Reddy waved his dueling cane. The two forces crashed into one another. Bleeder stepped closer to Wax in the Mists. Atop this high platform, this tower on the bridge, nothing else seemed to exist. It was as if they stood on a tiny steel island rising from the sea. Gray all around, darkness extending into vastness above.
"Maybe I should have come to you," Lessie's voice said, "and had you helped me with my plan. But he was watching. He's always watching. I'm glad you took the earring out. At least my words meant something to you."
"Stop," Wax whispered. "Please."
"Stop what?"
Lessie asked, mere inches from him.
"Stop walking. Stop talking. Stop loving you. My life would have been a lot easier if I'd been able to do that.
Wax seized her with his open hand, grabbing her by the neck, thumb along her jaw. She met his eyes, and he saw pity in them.
"Perhaps," she said, "the reason I didn't come to you had no connection to Harmony at all. I knew this would hurt you. I'm sorry."
"No," Wax thought.
"I'm going to have to do something about you," she said. "Keep you safe somehow, but out of the way. Might have to hurt you, Wax, for your own good."
"No, this isn't real."
"Still don't know what to do about Wayne," she said. "Couldn't bring myself to kill him, poor fool. He followed you here to help you in the city. For that, I love him. But he's still Harmony's, and so he's probably better dead than the way he is now."
"No." Wax shoved her back, lifting Vindication again. The gun, however, leaped from his fingers, pushed by Bleeder. It tumbled into the mists. Wax growled, ramming his shoulder into Bleeder, trying to toss her off the tower. She seized him as he hit, throwing them both off balance. As they fell together, she raised her aluminum gun and shot him in the leg. He cried out as they fell from the tower, dropping through the mists. A frantic push on the bridge below slowed Wax, but when he hit, his leg gave out and he screamed, dropping to one knee.
"Gun. Find the gun."
It had fallen this way. Rusts, would it even work after dropping so far? He hadn't heard it hit. Did that mean it had plunged into the waters? Bleeder landed hard nearby. She spun on him, lit now by the garish electric lights that lined the roadway of the bridge. It was empty of carriages and motor cars, and behind her a greater light hovered over the city. Red, violent light, seeming to burn the mists. Looking out of the city, he saw darkness and peace. But inward, Ellendale burned. Maracy edged along the outside of a battlefield. It was a very small battlefield, true, but the ferocity of the conflict stunned her. She felt she could, for the first time, imagine what it had been like to live during the War of Ash so long ago. But surely wars back then had been more thought out, more deliberate. Not this mixed jumble of figures beating on one another, breaking bones, cursing, stepping on the fallen. Watching it made her sick, anxious. Those men were her colleagues, struggling frantically to push through the Set's thugs. All night they'd been forced to stand and watch the city decompose around them, the situation growing worse and worse as they felt helpless. This was something they could fight, so fight they did, cracking heads, shoving down enemies, grunting in the dirty, dark alleyway in an effort to reach the carriage. Thankfully, the Set troops here didn't appear to include any coin shots or pewter arms. Her men were still outnumbered, and for all their determination, they weren't making much headway. Outside the alleyway, the crowd was growing restless. The Condra's speech turned towards the words Maracy had written for her, promising social reform, legislation to cut down work hours and improve conditions in the factories. What Maracy was able to hear of the echoing voice, unfortunately, had a sense of desperation to it. It sounded fake, inauthentic. That wasn't Milan's fault. She had said she didn't have time to prepare this imitation properly, and it wasn't her specialty in the first place. Rusts. The crowd started to shout, cursing the governor's lies. Milan's voice faltered. Was this the rioter whipping the crowd into a frenzy? Or were the people so angry they were overcoming the Allomancy? Either way, Maracy couldn't help feeling desperate as her men struggled and fell, the crowd building toward a full-on riot. She made her way along the side of the alley, hoping that if she got to that carriage, she could make a difference. Unfortunately, the alley's confines were too narrow, and combatants filled the entire thing. Already half her men were down. Those who fought looked like wraiths, shifting and undulating in the mists, shadows trying to consume shadows. Nobody on either side seemed to pay her much attention. That was common. For most of her life, her father had wished that she would vanish. Those in high society were very good at pretending she didn't exist. Even Waxillium seemed to forget she was along sometimes. Well, so be it. She took a deep breath and strode directly into the fight. As she neared two struggling men, she dodged in, as if trying to do something to help, then flung herself to the side as if she'd been hit. It was a fair impression, in her opinion. She heard Reddy curse her name from somewhere in the alleyway, but nobody came to her rescue. They kept trying very assiduously to kill one another, and so Marcy crept along the ground, crawling in the shadows until she neared the carriage. Two guards stood here. Drat! She needed to get past them. How? She glanced back toward the fight. It had moved farther up the alley, the constables being forced to retreat before superior numbers. They were probably far enough away that Marcy could try something truly desperate. She used her allomancy. For a brief moment, she engaged a speed bubble that caught herself and just the two guards. She extinguished her metal immediately. Only seconds had passed outside. It was still jarring. The mists seemed to zip with sudden speed around them, and the combatants lurched in their motions. The two guards jumped in surprise, looking around. Marcy did her best impression of a corpse. Then she flicked on the allomancy again.
"Ruin,"
one of the guards said.
"You see that?"
"There's metal born among them,"
the other said. They both sounded very nervous. Marcy gave them another jolt of distorted time. The two guards held a hushed, frantic argument. Then they knocked on the door of the carriage and spoke through the window. Marcy waited, sweating, her nerves taut. Her men didn't have much time. The two guards ran down the alleyway, leaving the carriage and carrying orders to the other combatants to be wary of Metalborn. Marcy got to her feet and slipped around to the other side of the carriage, which had no driver, then pulled open the door and slipped inside, seating herself. A pudgy woman sat on the bench within, wearing a lavish gown of three silken layers. A man beside her sat with a hand on her wrist, his eyes closed, his suit very stylish and modern. The handgun Marcy leveled at them was, on the other hand, quite traditional. And quite functional. The woman blinked, breaking her concentration to regard Marcy with a look of horror. She nudged the man, who opened his eyes, startled. One soother and one rioter, Marcy would guess.
"I have a theory," Marcy said to them, "that a gentlewoman should never need to resort to something so barbarous as violence to achieve her goals. Wouldn't you agree?"
The two quickly nodded.
"Yes, indeed," Marcy said. "A true gentlewoman uses the threat of violence instead. So much more civilized."
She cocked the gun. "Stop those pewterheads in the alley from beating up my friends. Then we'll talk about what to do with this crowd."
"Stop it, Wax!"
Leader screamed.
"Stop obeying him!"
There. Vindication. He spotted the gun near Bleeder, peeking out of a gutter alongside the roadway. Wax leaped for it, rolling painfully on his wounded arm, using a push to skid forward. Bleeder leveled her gun at him, but didn't fire. Perhaps, deep down, a part of the creature had adopted the feelings of the body it wore. Perhaps it no longer could tell the difference between its mind and its face. Wax snatched up Vindication.
"Please,"
Bleeder whispered.
"Listen."
"You're wrong about me,"
Wax said, spinning the chamber, feeling the trigger, hoping the gun still worked. He looked up at Bleeder and leveled the weapon. Looking down those sights, he saw Lessie. His stomach turned again.
"How am I wrong?"
Bleeder asked.
"Rusts." She was crying.
"I'm not Harmony's hands," Wax whispered. "I'm his sword."
Then he fired. Bleeder didn't dodge. Why would she? Guns barely inconvenienced her. This shot took her right in the forehead. Though her head flinched at the impact, she didn't fall, barely even moved. She stared at him, a little dribble of blood running down beside the bridge of her nose onto her lips. Then her eyes widened. Her gun dropped from trembling fingers.
"We're weaker than other hemallergic creatures,"
Milan had said. Wax struggled to his feet, holding on to the bridge's side wall for support.
"Only two spikes, and we can be taken."
"No!"
Bleeder screeched, falling to her knees.
"No!"
One spike allowed her to be sapient, and a second, delivered into her skull in the form of a bullet forged from Wax's earring.
Let Harmony seize control of her again.
26. Marcy towed the female soother after her, holding the woman's collar with one hand, her gun in the other. They were accompanied by a battered Reddy, who regarded the surging crowd with displeasure. They'd left the other captives with the rest of the constables, and she prayed to Harmony that wasn't tempting fate.
"Stop them,"
Marcy hissed at the woman as they reached the edge of the crowd, which was throwing things at the stage. Poor Milan soldiered onward with the speech, growing more and more testy that they weren't listening.
"I'm trying,"
the soother complained.
"It might be easier if you weren't choking me."
"Just soothe,"
Reddy said, raising his dueling cane.
"I can't control their minds, silly man," the soother said, "and beating on me won't accomplish anything. When do I get to speak to my solicitor? I've broken no laws. I was simply watching the proceedings with interest."
Marcy ignored Reddy's angry response, instead focusing on the crowd. Milan stood before them, lit by electric lights from behind, but by bonfires from the front. The rage of the crowd, an ancient fire, against the cold sterility of the new world.
"You should be grateful,"
Milan shouted at the crowd.
"I've come to talk to you myself."
Wrong words, Marcy thought. Her annoyance was leading her to deviate from the script.
"I'm listening," Milan yelled over the crowd. "But you have to listen back, you miscreants."
She sounds just like him. Too much, perhaps? Milan was playing a part. She was the governor, the role Marcy had given her. It seemed that the Chandra had let the form dictate her reactions. Rusts. It wasn't that she was doing a bad job, she was doing a good job of being innate. Unfortunately, innate had always had trouble connecting with the crowds.
"Fine,"
Milan said, waving a hand.
"Burn the city. See how you feel in the morning without homes to live in."
Marcy closed her eyes and groaned. Rusts, she was tired. How late was it now? The crowd was growing violent. Time to grab Milan and Wayne and leave. Their gambit had failed. It had been a long shot in the first place, perhaps impossible. This crowd had come for blood, and... The crowd shouted a new set of jeers. Marcy frowned, opening her eyes. She stood at the south edge of the crowd, near one of the bonfires, and was close enough to the front to make out Constable General Oradell, who had stepped up beside Milan. Likely he was going to get the governor to safety. Instead, Oradell took out his pistol and pointed it at the governor. Marcy gasped for a moment. Then she spun on the soother.
"Soothe them," she said. "Now, with everything you have. Do it, and I give you immunity for what you did tonight."
The woman eyed Marcy, displaying a craftiness that belied her earlier whining. She seemed to be weighing the offer.
"I promise it," Marcy said. "By the survivor's spear."
The woman nodded, and a wave went through the crowd, a sudden hush. It didn't quiet them completely, but when Oradell spoke, his voice carried.
"Replar innate," Oradell said. "In the name of the people of this city, and by the authority of my station as Lord High Constable, I arrest you for gross corruption, personal exploitation of this city's resources, and perjury of your oaths as a civil servant."
The crowd finally stilled completely.
"What idiocy?"
Milan began.
"Men, turn around," Oradell said.
He looked down at his constables.
"Turn around."
The feeble line of soldiers reluctantly turned to face him, putting their backs to the crowd.
"What is he doing?"
Reddy demanded.
"Something brilliant,"
Marcy said. Oradell looked over the crowd, still holding a gun to the governor.
"Tonight, the governor himself declared this city to be in a state of martial law. That puts the constables in charge, with him at the head. Unfortunately, it turns out the governor is a lying bastard."
Some of the people began hesitant shouts of agreement.
"He's no longer in control," Oradell said. "Best I can figure, you're in control. So if you're willing, tonight, the constables stand with you. Now you all came here to start a riot. Listen. Stop your shouts. I won't stand for rioting or looting. You start burning this city and I'll fight you up to my last breath. You hear me? We aren't a mob.
Then what are we?
A call went up, along with a handful of others.
We're the people of Elendil, and we're tired of being led by a pack of rats,
Aradel yelled.
I have proof of at least 7 House Lords who are corrupt. I mean to see them arrested. Tonight.
Aradel hesitated, then spoke louder, voice carrying and amplified by the cones set up before the stage.
I could use an army to help me, if you're willing.
As the crowd roared its agreement, Aradel shoved Milan into the hands of a pair of corporals waiting nearby. They seemed utterly stunned. In truth, Aradel himself seemed a little overwhelmed by what he'd just done.
Pure preservation,
Reddy cursed softly, looking over the excited crowd.
They're going to turn into a lynch mob.
No, Marcy said. They won't.
How can you be sure?
Because a river is easier to channel than to stop, Reddy, Marcy said.
This could work. She didn't have much hope for holding the House Lords and Ladies Aradel wanted to arrest, but the governor himself. With those letters and Milan playing the role? Yes, this could really work. She released the soother.
You're free. Get out of here. And tell Soot he might want to take an extended vacation during what is coming.
Wax crossed the bridge, limping. Life had taught him never to underestimate an enemy you thought you'd downed. One hand on his bleeding leg, he kept his gun trained on the writhing figure until he could sweep her gun away. Then he went down on his good knee and rolled her over, making certain she wasn't covering up another weapon. He found tears streaming from her eyes, mixing with the trickling blood from the bullet wound.
"He's in my head again, Wax,"
she whispered, trembling.
"Oh, Ruin. He's in my head. He's taking me. I won't go back to him."
"Hush," Wax said, pulling a second gun from her side and tossing it away. "It's all right."
"No,"
she cried, grabbing his arm.
"No, it's not. I won't be his again. I will be me at the end."
Bleeder's trembling increased, her body bucking as she held his arm. He frowned as she kept her head thrust forward, meeting his eyes, weeping and shuddering. Thrashing.
"What are you doing?" Wax demanded.
"Dying. We decided it. We won't fall again. We found a way out."
She could no longer meet his eyes, and she fell backward, spasming. Eyes dilating quickly, skin trembling against the bone. Wax watched, horrified. He seized her arm. No pulse. She was dying. Killing herself. Could he stop it? Why would he care to? She was a murderer many times over. This was a fitting end. In truth, he empathized with her. Let her take this route rather than suffering under Harmony's control. Hesitant, but feeling there was little else he could do for this poor creature, he picked her up and held her close. Let her die in someone's arms. It revolted him to do so after what she had done, but damn it, it was right. Bleeder turned her head toward him, and her expression softened as she shook, smiling through bloodied lips.
You're as surprising as a dancing donkey, Mr. Cravat.
Wax grew cold.
Where did you hear that? How did you know those words?
I think I loved you even on that day,
she said.
Lawman for hire. So ridiculous, but so earnest. You didn't try to shelter me, but seemed so eager to impress. A lord with a purpose.
Who told you of that day, Bleeder? Wax demanded. Who?
Ask Harmony,
she said, the trembling growing more violent.
Ask him, Wax. Ask why he sent a Chondra to watch over you all those years ago. Ask him if he knew I would come to love you.
No.
He moved us, even then,
she whispered.
I refused. I wouldn't manipulate you into returning to Elendil.
You loved it out there. I wouldn't bring you back to become his pawn.
Lassie? Harmony, it was her. It was her.
Ask him, Wax, she said. Ask him why, if he knows everything, he'd let you kill me.
She grew still.
Lassie,
Wax said.
Lassie!
She was gone. There in his lap, he stared at her body. It kept its shape. Her shape. He clutched her and let out a low-pitched howl from deep within. A raw shout that echoed in the night. It seemed to drive the mists back. He still knelt there, holding the body, an hour later when a figure loped out of the mists and approached on four legs. Tensun the Chondra, guardian of the ascendant warrior, approached with a reverent step. Wolfhound's head bowed. Wax stared out into those shifting mists, holding a corpse, hoping irrationally that his heat would keep it warm.
Tell me,
Wax said, voice cracking and rough from his shouting.
Tell me, Chondra.
She was sent to you long ago, Tensun said, sitting back on his haunches. The woman you knew as Lassie was always one of us.
No.
Harmony worried about you and the Ruffs, lawman, Tensun said. He wanted you to have a bodyguard. Fa'am had exhibited a willingness to break prohibitions the rest of us held sacred. He hoped that you two would be good for one another.
You didn't tell me!
Wax spat, his grip tight. Hatred. He didn't think he had ever felt hatred so intense as he did at that moment.
I was forbidden, Tensun said. Milan didn't know. I was only informed a few days ago. Harmony foresaw a disaster if you were told whom you hunted.
And this isn't a disaster, Chondra?
Tensun turned away. They sat there on that empty bridge, electric lights making pockets in the mist, a dead woman in Wax's lap.
I killed her,
Wax whispered, squeezing his eyes closed.
I killed her again.
Epilogue. Wax sat alone in a room full of people. They'd done everything to make him comfortable. A warm fire on the hearth, a small lamp on the table beside it. Prosteris knew he preferred flame to electricity. Broadsheets lay untouched in a row beside a cup of tea that had long since grown cold. They talked and celebrated, led by Lord Harms, who laughed and exclaimed about his minor part in it all. A disaster averted. A new governor. The first ever who was not of noble blood. Even the Lord Mistborn long ago had been part nobleman. The last emperor had been full-blooded, and the survivor half-nobleman. All great people, everyone agreed, to be lauded. But Claude Aradel had none of the same lineage, not a drop of noble blood in him. Those at the party congratulated one another for being so progressive as to speak favorably of one who was common-born. Wax stared into the fire, fingering at the stubble on his chin. He spoke when it was required of him, but mostly they allowed him his peace. He was wrung out, Steris told them, fatigued by the terrible things he'd seen. She diverted them from him when she could, telling them, when they inevitably asked, that she and he had decided to delay the wedding so Wax could take a short vacation to recuperate. Partway through the event, Wayne sauntered over on crutches. He couldn't heal without storing up more health, and he couldn't do that while healing from his wound, or it would defeat the purpose. For now, he had to deal with the fragility of the body just like a normal person.
We're all so fragile, when you consider it, Wax thought. One little thing goes wrong, and we break.
Hey, mate,
Wayne said, settling down on the footstool by Wax's feet.
Wanna hear how I'm a rustin' genius?
Shoot, Wax whispered. Wayne leaned forward, spread his hands before himself dramatically.
I'm gonna get everybody drunk.
The crowd continued its chatter. Mostly constables. Some political allies of Wax's. He'd chosen to do business with the more reputable people in the city, so Aradel's culling of the lords hadn't hit his house. It was considered an enormous political victory.
See, I got this plan, Wayne said, tapping his head. People in this town, they got issues. The folks what work in the factories think having more time to themselves is gonna fix their woes, but they gotta do something with that time. I've got an idea. It'll fix it all.
Harmony, Wayne, Wax said, you're not going to poison the city, are you?
Nah, Wayne said. Not their bodies, at least.
He grinned.
You watch. This will work. It's gonna be amazing.
He rose and stumbled, almost falling. He looked at his leg in surprise, as if he'd forgotten about the wound. Then he shook his head, grabbing his crutch and getting to his feet. Once standing, he hesitated, then leaned down.
"It'll pass, mate," he said. "My pa once said to me, 'Son, keep a stiff upper lip. So if things get bad, you bash your face against a wall till your lip bleeds, and you'll feel better.' Works for me. At least I think it does. Can't right remember, on account of too many head wounds."
He grinned. Wax kept staring into the flames. Wayne's face fell.
"She'd have wanted you to stop her, you know," Wayne said softly. "If she'd been able to talk to you, been able to think straight, she'd have demanded you kill her. Just like I'd have wanted it, just like you'd want the same if you'd lost your copper. You did what you had to do, mate. And you did it well."
He made a fist at Wax and nodded, then hobbled off, approaching a short young woman with long golden hair. A teenage girl? Wax didn't recognize her.
"I know you, don't I?" Wayne said. "Daughter of Remingtel Toxel? The guy what invented the incandescent light bulb?"
The girl's jaw dropped.
"You know him?"
She seized Wayne by the arms.
"You know about my father?"
"Sure do," Wayne said. "He was robbed, I gotta say. Genius. Word is, you're just as smart. That device you whipped up for making speeches sure is nice."
She regarded Wayne, then leaned in.
"That's only the start. They've brought it into their houses. Don't you see? It's all around."
"What?"
Wayne said.
"Electricity," the girl said. "And I'm going to be the first to use it."
"Huh," Wayne said. "Need some money?"
"Do I?"
She towed Wayne away through the party, aglow, speaking so quickly Wax couldn't pick out the words. He didn't care to. He just stared at the fire. The guests were polite enough not to imply that he was ruining the party by his indifference. Clotilde passed by, swapping his cold cup of tea out for a warm one. For all Wax cared, this comfortable chair could have been a hard bench. He didn't feel it, or the warmth of the fire, or the joy of the victory. How could you hear a bee buzzing in the middle of a thunderstorm? The guests eventually found excuses to leave, their sedate revels accomplished. Some bade farewell to him. Others did not. About halfway through the protracted death of the party, Marcy settled down on his footstool. She wore her constable's uniform. Odd thing to do at a party, though as he thought about it, the man in the constabulary did it all the time. Marcy took his tea and sipped it, then placed something else onto the table where the cup had been. Wax's eyes flicked toward it. A small spike, long as a finger, made of some silvery metal with dark red spots, like rusted bits.
"That's one of the spikes she was using, Waxillium," Marcy said softly. "Milan wanted me to show it to you."
Wax closed his eyes. They thought he wanted to see something like that.
"Waxillium," Marcy said. "We can't identify the metal. It's nothing we've ever seen before. It certainly wasn't one of the spikes she started with. That means she removed both and stuck this one like this in instead. Where did she get them? Who gave them to her?"
"I don't care," he whispered, opening his eyes. Marcy grew quiet.
"Wax."
"He sent her to me, Marcy.
He sent a Chandra to seduce me.
No,
Maracy said, firm. He sent a bodyguard to watch over you in the roughs. I spoke to Tensun. The seduction was her idea. And yours, presumably.
Harmony knew, Wax said hoarsely. He saw what would happen.
Maybe he didn't.
Then what kind of god is he? What good is a god like him, Maracy? Tell me that.
Maracy fidgeted, then sighed and took the strange spike back. She dropped something else onto the table as she rose. A small earring, just a stud with the back bent over.
They sent this for you.
Wax didn't look at it. He left that earring right where it was, as Maracy made her farewells and stepped out of the party. Others came to him, offered bland encouragement of the type you might write on a card. He nodded, but didn't listen. Maracy stopped by the precinct offices on her way home from the party at Ladrian Mansion, intent on retrieving her copy of Lord Mistborn's hemallergy book, which she'd locked in her drawer. The offices were dark and quiet, a direct contrast to the chaos of a few nights back. Though some constables were out on patrol, most had been given time off. Only those with jail watch would be on duty. So it surprised her when she found lights on at the back of the main chamber. She walked up and leaned against the doorframe, looking in at Aradel, who had a stack of papers out and was working on them by candlelight.
I find it hard to believe, Maracy noted, that there's nothing better for the governor to do on his first day in office than equipment depreciation reports. Not that I mind. You've been ignoring those for how long?
Aradel's expression soured.
I'm not governor, he said. Not really.
The title interim governor has the word governor in it, sir.
They'll vote someone else into office next month at the proper hearing.
Frankly, sir, I doubt that.
He slapped one page down on the stack, signed and sealed, then sat there staring at it. Finally, he ran a hand through his hair.
Oh, preservation, what have I done? And why the hell didn't any of you stop me?
Maracy smiled.
You didn't exactly give us a chance, sir.
I'll run away, he said. I'll refuse the appointment. I'll...
He looked up at her and then sighed.
I can't be happy in this position, Combs.
The ones who are happy in the role, sir, seem to have had their chance. I'm excited to see where it goes from here. You just changed the world.
Didn't mean to.
Doesn't matter,
Maracy said, glancing to the side as someone else moved through the darkened chamber approaching. Another constable coming in to catch up on work?
Oh, no.
Governor Innate stepped up to the door holding a belt.
Either of you know how to tie one of these?
The former governor said in Milan's voice.
You don't tie a belt, Chandra, Aradel said. You buckle it.
No, no,
Milan said, pulling it tight.
I mean in making a noose. People always talk about guys hanging themselves in their cells, but I'll be damned if I can figure it out. Hung there for a good 10 minutes, and I'm pretty sure it would have killed even the most frail mortal. I've got it wrong somehow.
She looked up at the two of them, then frowned at their appalled expressions.
What?
Hang yourself, Maracy spluttered, finally finding her voice. You're our linchpin witness.
You really think,
Milan said dryly,
that Harmony would let me sit at trial and testify falsely against people I don't even know? It would make a mockery of justice, kids.
No, Maracy said. We have the letters. We know the truth.
Do you?
Milan asked, pulling the belt tight again.
You know for certain Pa'am didn't forge those letters, or that Innate himself didn't do it before she took him. You know that those lords and ladies went through with the plans rather than backing out. You know they weren't just talking about possibilities.
We've got good cases, Holy Immortal, Aradel said. Lieutenant Combs has done her research. We're pretty sure this is all correct.
Then convince the judge and jury,
Milan said with a shrug.
We don't do things like this. People have to be able to trust the law. I'm a lot of things, but I'm not going to be the one who sets the precedent that the Chandra can lie in order to get someone convicted, even if you're pretty sure you've got the right evidence.
Marisi folded her arms, grinding her teeth. Aradel glanced at her, questioning.
Without her, they'll wiggle out of it, Marisi said. We won't be able to keep them in jail. They'll be loose upon the city again.
She sighed.
But... blast! She's probably right, sir. I'd have hit on it if I'd thought about it long enough. We can't falsify evidence, however right our cause.
He nodded.
We weren't going to keep them in prison anyway, Combs. I have too much power even now. They'd find a way to escape conviction, pinning the charges on subordinates.
He sat back in his chair.
They'll have the governor's seat again, unless someone does something about it. Damn it. I really have to do this, don't I?
Sorry, sir,
Marisi said.
Well, at least I can get my desk clear of paperwork first, he said, leaning forward in determination. Suggestions for my replacement as Constable General?
Ready,
Marisi said.
He hates you.
Doesn't make him a bad conner, sir, Marisi said. So long as someone keeps an eye on him, as you put it. I can do that. I think he'll rise to the challenge.
Aradel nodded, then held up a hand to Milan. She tossed him the belt, and he tied it in a loop.
This part around your neck, Holy One. Make your skin bruise so it looks right, a V-shape. You know how to make someone look like they died of strangling?
Yeah,
Milan said.
Unfortunately.
I'll come cut you down in 15 minutes, Aradel said. You'll need to fool the coroner.
No problem,
Milan said.
I can breathe through a tracheal system instead of lungs. Arrange to have the body cremated. Give me a window and I'll slip out and leave the bones, which you can burn. Nice and neat.
Fine,
Aradel said, looking sick. Milan bade him farewell, wandering back toward the cells. Marisi joined her after giving Aradel a salute he didn't see.
How did you get out, anyway?
Marisi asked, catching up to Milan.
Stuck my finger in the lock, Milan said, and melted my skin, shoving a bit in. It's amazing what you can do when you aren't constrained to normal body shapes.
They walked together to the entrance of the jail part of the building. Marisi wasn't going to ask how Milan had avoided the guards. Hopefully the two hadn't been hurt.
Harmony knows, right?
Marisi asked as Milan lingered at the door. If these people are guilty or not?
He does.
So you could simply ask him if it's just to imprison them. If he says yes, we go through with it. I'd accept God's word on the matter to satisfy my conscience.
Still breaks our rules, Milan said, and Harmony probably wouldn't talk.
Why not? Marisi said. You realize what all this has done to Auxilium, right?
He'll weather it.
He shouldn't have to.
And what would you have Harmony do, woman? Give us all the answers? Lead us by the noses, like Pa'am swore that he did? Turn us all into pieces on a board for his amusement?
Marisi stepped back. She'd never heard such a tone from Milan.
Or maybe you want it the other way,
Milan snapped.
Leave us alone completely? Not intervene at all?
No, I...
Can you imagine what it must be like? Knowing that any action you take is going to help some, but hurt others? Save a man's life now, let him spread a disease that kills a child later in his life. Harmony does the best he can. The best possible, by the very definition. Yes, he hurt Wax. He hurt him badly. But he put the pain where he knew it could be borne.
Marisi blushed then, annoyed at herself, dug in her purse and brought out the strange spike.
And this?
It's not a medal we know.
That's what Tensun said, but Harmony...
It's not a medal Harmony knows,
Milan said. Marisi felt a chill.
Then, it's not his? Not from his form? Like the old stories of Atium and Larassium?
No,
Milan said.
It's from somewhere else. She used these strange spikes to steal attributes instead of the ones we're familiar with. Maybe that's why she could use stolen Elemency and Ferrochemy when other Chandra can't. Either way, didn't you wonder why Harmony couldn't see Bleeder? Couldn't track her? Couldn't predict her? What could stop a god, Marisi Combs? Any guesses?
Another god,
Marisi whispered.
Congratulations, Milan said, pulling open the door. You've found proof of something that terrifies us. Think on that for a while before you go around accusing Harmony or the Chandra of anything. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go try to hang myself properly.
She slipped away, closing the door behind her.
Another god, Maracy thought, standing in the darkness. Not Harmony, not Ruin, not Preservation.
She looked down at the small spike in her hands and heard a name from a year ago spoken by Miles Hundred Lives as he died. The name of a god from the old days. Maracy had researched the name half-heartedly, far more distracted by her interaction with Iron Eyes. Now, however, she determined to dig back into the records and find the answers. Who, or what, was Trell? The room had probably grown silent long before Wax noticed he was alone. The fire was dying. He should do something about that. He didn't. Steris stepped over and set a new log on, then stirred the embers. So he hadn't been alone. She set the poker beside the fireplace, then regarded him. He awaited her words. None came. Instead, she scooted the footstool around until it was beside his chair. She sat down, legs crossed neatly, hands in her lap. The two of them remained there, not saying a word, though she did eventually rest her hand on top of his. The fire had felt cold to him, the air frozen, but that hand was warm. Finally, he turned to the side, rested his head on her shoulder, and wept. Ars Arcanum, Metal's Quick Reference Chart. Metal, iron, elemantic power, pulls on nearby sources of metal, ferrochemical power, stores physical weight. Steel, elemantic power, pushes on nearby sources of metal, ferrochemical power, stores physical speed. Tin, elemantic power, increases senses, ferrochemical power, stores senses. Pewter, elemantic power, increases physical abilities, ferrochemical power, stores physical strength. Zinc, elemantic power, riots, inflames, emotions, ferrochemical power, stores mental speed. Brass, elemantic power, soothes, dampens, emotions, ferrochemical power, stores warmth. Copper, elemantic power, hides elemantic pulses, ferrochemical power, stores memories. Bronze, elemantic power, allows one to hear elemantic pulses, ferrochemical power, stores wakefulness. Cadmium, elemantic power, slows down time, ferrochemical power, stores breath. Bend alloy, elemantic power, speeds up time, ferrochemical power, stores energy. Gold, elemantic power, reveals your past self, ferrochemical power, stores health. Electrum, elemantic power, reveals your own future, ferrochemical power, stores determination. Chromium, elemantic power, wipes elemantic reserves of target, ferrochemical power, stores fortune. Nicrosil, elemantic power, enhances elemantic burn of target, ferrochemical power, stores investiture. Aluminum, elemantic power, wipes internal elemantic reserves, ferrochemical power, stores identity. Duralumin, elemantic power, enhances the next metal burned, ferrochemical power, stores connection. List of metals. Aluminum. A mistborn who burns aluminum instantly metabolizes all of his or her metals without giving any other effect, wiping all elemantic reserves. Mistings who can burn aluminum are called aluminum gnats due to the ineffectiveness of this ability by itself. True self-fairings can store their spiritual sense of identity in an aluminum metal mind. This is an art rarely spoken of outside of Terrace communities, and even among them it is not yet well understood. Aluminum itself and a few of its alloys are elementically inert. They cannot be pushed or pulled, and can be used to shield an individual from emotional allomancy. Bend alloy. Slider mistings burn bend alloy to compress time in a bubble around themselves, making it pass more quickly within the bubble. This causes events outside the bubble to move at a glacial pace from the point of view of the slider. Subhumor fairings can store nutrition and calories in a bend alloy metal mind. They can eat large amounts of food during active storage without feeling full or gaining weight, and then can go without the need to eat while tapping the metal mind. A separate bend alloy metal mind can be used to similarly regulate fluids intake. Brass. Soother mistings burn brass to soothe, dampen, the emotions of nearby individuals. This can be directed at a single individual or directed across a general area, and the soother can focus on specific emotions. Fire soul fairings can store warmth in a brass metal mind, cooling themselves off while actively storing. They can tap the metal mind at a later time to warm themselves. Bronze. Seeker mistings burn bronze to hear pulses given off by other allomancers who are burning metals. Different metals produce different pulses. Sentry fairings can store wakefulness in a bronze metal mind, making themselves drowsy while actively storing. They can tap the metal mind at a later time to reduce drowsiness or to heighten their awareness. Cadmium. Pulsar mistings burn cadmium to stretch time in a bubble around themselves, making it pass more slowly inside the bubble. This causes events outside the bubble to move at blurring speed from the point of view of the pulsar. Gasper fairings can store breath inside a cadmium metal mind. During active storage, they must hyperventilate in order for their bodies to get enough air. The breath can be retrieved at a later time, eliminating or reducing the need to breathe using the lungs while tapping the metal mind. They can also highly oxygenate their blood. Chromium. Leecher mistings who burn chromium while touching another allomancer will wipe that allomancer's metal reserves. Spinner fairings can store fortune in a chromium metal mind, making themselves unlucky during active storage, and can tap it at a later time to increase their luck. Copper. Copper cloud mistings, aka smokers, burn copper to create an invisible cloud around themselves which hides nearby allomancers from being detected by a seeker and which shields the smoker from the effects of emotional allomancy. Archivist fairings can store memories in a copper metal mind. Copper mind. The memory is gone from their head while in storage and can be retrieved with perfect recall at a later time. Duralumin. A mistborn who burns duralumin instantly burns away any other metals being burned at the time, releasing an enormous burst of those metals' power. Mistings who can burn duralumin are called duralumin gnats due to the ineffectiveness of this ability by itself. Connector fairings can store spiritual connection in a duralumin metal mind, reducing other people's awareness and friendship with them during active storage, and can tap it at a later time in order to speedily form trust relationships with others. Electrum. Oracle mistings burn electrum to see a vision of possible paths their future could take. This is usually limited to a few seconds. Pinnacle fairings can store determination in an electrum metal mind, entering a depressed state during active storage, and can tap it at a later time to enter a manic phase. Gold. Augur mistings burn gold to see a vision of a past self or how they would have turned out having made different choices in the past. Bloodmaker fairings can store health in a gold metal mind, reducing their health while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time in order to heal quickly or to heal beyond the body's usual abilities. Iron. Lurcher mistings who burn iron can pull on nearby sources of metal. Pulls must be directly toward the lurcher's center of gravity. Skimmer fairings can store physical weight in an iron metal mind, reducing their effective weight while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their effective weight. Nicrosil. Nicroburst mistings, who burn Nicrosil while touching another Allomancer, will instantly burn away any metals being burned by that Allomancer, releasing an enormous and perhaps unexpected burst of those metals' power within that Allomancer. Soulbearer fairings can store investiture in a Nicrosil metal mind. This is a power that very few know anything about. Indeed, I'm certain the people of Terrace don't truly know what they are doing when they use these powers. Pewter. Pewter arm mistings, aka thugs, burn pewter to increase their physical strength, speed, and durability, also enhancing their body's ability to heal. Brute fairings can store physical strength in a pewter metal mind, reducing their strength while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their strength. Steel. Coinshot mistings who burn steel can push on nearby sources of metal. Pushes must be directly away from the coin shot's center of gravity. Steel runner fairings can store physical speed in a steel metal mind, slowing them while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to increase their speed. Tin. Tin eye mistings who burn tin increases the sensitivity of their five senses. All are increased at the same time. Wind Whisperer fairings can store the sensitivity of one of the five senses into a tin metal mind. A different tin metal mind must be used for each sense. While storing, their sensitivity in that sense is reduced, and when the metal mind is tapped, that sense is enhanced. Zinc. Rioter mistings burn zinc to riot, inflame, the emotions of nearby individuals. This can be directed at a single individual or directed across a general area, and the rioter can focus on specific emotions. Sparker fairings can store mental speed in a zinc metal mind, dulling their ability to think and reason while actively storing, and can tap it at a later time to think and reason more quickly. On the three metallic arts. On Scadrial, there are three prime manifestations of investiture. Locally, these are spoken of as the metallic arts, though there are other names for them. Allomancy is the most common of the three. It is end-positive, according to my terminology, meaning that the practitioner draws in power from an external source. The body then filters it into various forms. The actual outlet of the power is not chosen by the practitioner, but instead is handwritten into their spirit web. The key to drawing this power comes in the form of various types of metals, with specific compositions being required. Though the metal is consumed in the process, the power itself doesn't actually come from the metal. The metal is a catalyst, you might say, that begins an investiture and keeps it running. In truth, this isn't much different from the form-based investitures one finds on Cell, where specific shape is the key. Here, however, the interactions are more limited. Still, one cannot deny the raw power of allomancy. It is instinctive and intuitive for the practitioner, as opposed to requiring a great deal of study and exactness, as one finds in the form-based investitures of Cell. Allomancy is brutal, raw, and powerful. There are 16 base metals that work, though two others, named the God metals locally, can be used in alloy to craft an entirely different set of 16 each. As these god metals are no longer commonly available, however, the other metals are not in wide use. Ferrochemy is still widely known and used at this point on Scadrial. Indeed, you might say that it is more present today than it has been in many eras past, when it was confined to distant Terrace or hidden from sight by the Keepers. Ferrochemy is an end-neutral art, meaning that power is neither gained nor lost. The art also requires metal as a focus, but instead of being consumed, the metal acts as a medium by which abilities within the practitioner are shuttled through time. Invest that metal on one day, withdraw the power on another day. It is a well-rounded art, with some feelers in the physical, some in the cognitive, and even some in the spiritual. The last powers are under heavy experimentation by the Terrace community and aren't spoken of to outsiders. It should be noted that the inbreeding of the ferrochemists with the general population has diluted the power in some ways, It is now common for people to be born with access to only one of the 16 parachemical abilities. It is hypothesized that if one could make metal mines out of alloys with the god metals, other abilities could be discovered. Hemallergy is widely unknown in the modern world of Scadrial. Its secrets were kept close by those who survived their world's rebirth, and the only known practitioners of it now are the Chondra, who, for the most part, serve Harmony. Hemallergy is an end-negative art. Some power is lost in the practice of it. Though many through history have maligned it as an evil art, none of the investitures are actually evil. At its core, hemallergy deals with removing abilities or attributes from one person and bestowing them on another. It is primarily concerned with things of the spiritual realm and is of the greatest interest to me. If one of these three arts is of great interest to the Cosmere, it is this one. I think there are great possibilities for its use. Combinations. It is possible on Scadrial to be born with ability to access both Allomancy and Ferrochemy. This has been of specific interest to me lately, as the mixing of different types of investiture has curious effects. One needs look only at what has happened on Roshar to find this manifested. Two powers, combined, often have an almost chemical reaction. Instead of getting out exactly what you put in, you get something new. On Scadrial, someone with one allomantic power and one ferrochemical power is called twin-born. The effects here are more subtle than they are when mixing surges on Roshar, but I am convinced that each unique combination also creates something distinctive. Not just two powers, you could say, but two powers and an effect. This demands further study. We hope you've enjoyed Shadows of Self, a Macmillan audio production from Tor Books. Text copyright 2015 by Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2015 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.